Mets fans, prepare yourselves to get mesmerized.
Hello and welcome to an emergency edition of the Get Mesmerized podcast, presented as always by MetsmerizedOnline.com. I'm Sal Manzo, joined by my co-host and MMO executive editor, Mike Mayer, along with associate editor, Patrick Glynn. Guys, how we doing today?
I mean, if you're a Mets fan, you're pretty damn excited. Max Scherzer and Jacob deGrom for at least 2 years, maybe 3 years, two of the best pitchers on the planet in one rotation. Tough to beat that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm one of those Mets fan that's really excited today. Just exactly what Mike said. I mean, I still don't feel that it's real. I mean, in the next couple of days, I think it's going to be real, kind of once, you know, that his name's on the dotted line. But maybe that's just the PTSD of just being a Mets fan for so long. But it doesn't quite feel real yet. Like, I might need to see him, like, put the jersey on or something like that. That might not happen until February. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm happy. I'm happy for the Mets and for Mets fans.
I share the same sentiment, guys. I've been saying it all day. I don't know what alternate universe I got dropped into, but I'm not leaving. I love it here. I'm staying. It's great. But before we get started, really quick, Mike, I was wondering, do you have any more signings that you want to drop maybe here today? I know you do it for other teams now and on Twitter. I just want to see if you had anything for today.
I don't have anything yet. Maybe later today. It could be a crazy night because some guys are still holding out. Javier Baez is another guy they expect could sign soon. There's going to be some more action tonight. I think we'll see some smaller deals too. Like, we've seen a run on like Daniel Hudson and Kirby Yates. We've seen a run on some relievers. So I think you'll see some of those smaller pieces start moving too.
Definitely. And listen, it's been a wild 24 hours, but somehow the New York freaking Mets landed future Hall of Famer Max Scherzer. That's why we're here with a record free agent deal. Mike, please, can you tell us how the heck this happened? How did we get here?
It was actually about 2 days ago now. The Mets were very serious with Kevin Gausman. They thought they had a good offer to him and there was a potential that they were going to land him. At that time, I don't think the Mets really thought they had a legitimate chance at getting Scherzer. It was, oh, of course we're going to show interest. He's one of the best pitchers on the planet and we have money to spend. And then they got talking more in depth to him and they found out they really had a chance. So they kind of shifted away from Gausman and went after Scherzer. Of course, Gausman signed last night. So that kind of made it even more like, oh, we've got to get Scherzer because Gausman was one of the best other options on the market. It got close last night. They had a really good offer out there last night. Dodgers and Angels were kind of in it a little bit. I know someone mentioned the Giants, but I don't really think they had a chance. Mets fans really thought this was going down last night. Didn't end up going down, which is just Boris. I mean, Boris is a thorough type of guy. He's not going to rush these type of things. And I'm sure Scherzer was doing what he wanted to do by going to New York too and not going back to LA. And then this morning, I think it was right about 8 o'clock, I got a message that Boris and the Mets had talked and that things are starting to heat up, which was a good sign for the Mets. From there, they hashed it out. I think we knew within about an hour, kept on getting messages that they were getting closer. And then one that said, essentially, this is happening, that the Mets were getting Scherzer. It was just a matter of some small details. 3 years, $130 million, no trade clause, opt out after the second year. He's a Met, and that's kind of, like we were talking about earlier, it's kind of still not even like from a fan perspective, but just from a baseball perspective, to think about DeGrom and Scherzer in the same rotation, stuff like that doesn't happen very often. I posted the stat earlier that it's only the seventh time in Major League history that teammates have multiple Cy Young awards. Interestingly enough, three of those times have happened with the Mets when they had Pedro and Santana and then Santana and Glavine. But yeah, so on opening day, they'll be the seventh ones to be teammates. So this type of talent, I mean, we're talking about two future Hall of Famers at the front of your rotation. That's teams dream about this stuff.
Yeah, I'm speaking of opening day, the Mets are opening 2022 against the Nationals, you know, which is just a little, I don't know if it's irony or whatever it is, but maybe a little bit bittersweet or something like that. Jeff Passan said on ESPN today that really like all of baseball was pretty surprised that it was going down. You saw a lot of like Nationals beat reporters and stuff today really talking about how like they were kind of even in shock. I think by covering him for so long and kind of probably seeing how competitive he was against the Mets, the fact that he'll be on that other side now and by choice, not by trade or something like that, was pretty surprising. There was a very, very small window. Mike, you might have been asleep by now, but maybe like 12:30, 1 a.m. or so, where the heat from the John Morosi tweet, he was like, they're finalizing a deal. He tweeted that maybe around 11, 11:30 or so. And then it was radio silence from every reporter in all night, but we didn't know it was all night. And there was a small window where I personally thought, I was like, okay, they clearly shifted their focus to Max Scherzer and lost out on Kevin Gausman, who signed earlier in the night. And then with that bit of radio silence, it's like, oh no, are they going to lose out on both? But thankfully they didn't, you know, as Mike detailed the next morning, it just seemingly the Dodgers, the Angels, the Giants, none of them wanted to go to that third year. And it seemed like they were just waiting out to see if anybody wanted to. There's also been a lot of chatter today about Max Scherzer. They're like, he did it for the union. You know, he had to do it. He's like a union leader, but it's like, I think he might be doing it for that extra year of $43 million, you know, and money talks. That's what we've always really wanted from the Mets. You know, their payroll is going to be astronomical next year. That's totally fine by me. Like, no, we shouldn't be worrying about the numbers of the team they put out, really just the quality of the team they put out. And yeah, it's just a really overall great time.
Yeah. One note with the Nationals, I think it's also funny to mention that the Nationals are going to be paying Max Scherzer $15 million a year next year and until 2028 to pitch for the Mets the next 3 years. And who knows if he keeps pitching after that. I'm sure that'll be a fun counteract to the Bobby Bonilla stuff this year, is the fact that Scherzer's pitching for the Mets and getting paid $15 million by the Nationals this year. It's pretty comical.
Yeah, so he'll be making something like $58 million this year to pitch for the Mets, and not really, you know, and the Mets will, quote, only be paying for $43 million of that. Yeah, man, this whole search, really, where you hear something about Scherzer where he's like, he wants the West Coast, which, like, okay, sure, there's a sliver of truth to that. And then, you know, as Scherzer to the Mets started gaining steam, they were like, you know, he just bought a house down in Jupiter that's only 30 minutes from Port St. Lucie. You know, that might mean that he really actually wants to go to the Mets. And ultimately what this comes down to is money. People will always go places for money. So if you have years and years and years and years and years of owners kind of being like, eh, they just didn't want to come to us, you probably weren't offering that person enough money. This is not like the general manager search that the Mets just went through, where it was like, maybe people don't want that responsibility. This is like, I mean, Scherzer's already made life-changing money, but really any free agent will go somewhere if they pay them right. You know, you look at someone like Corey Seager, who just went to the Rangers. Like, if any team offered him $325 million and nobody else was, he was going to go to that team. You don't got to worry about state taxes. You don't got to worry about all these little tiny minute details. It's all about spending money, and the Mets finally are spending money.
Guys, I echo everything you said. There's not much more I can say as far as that. But, you know, I want to piggyback on a few things, Patrick, that you actually said. You know, one, as far as I guess kind of twofold, you know, I do agree, you know, as far as you follow where the money is. You know, friends that I spoke to and stuff like that, at the beginning, all this thinking that, you know, there was no shot the Mets would be able to get him. You know, he was staying on the West Coast, and I agreed, frankly. I didn't see any of this coming, but I did, you know, I kept saying the fact that, you know, $45 million is $45 million a year, and that might change that to come here. I was a little off. It's 43.3 or whatever, but you know, you do follow the dollar signs. And I also do think that there probably is part of it as the union leader. It's probably not a good look that if you go to another team for less money days away with what's all going on, especially if, you know, there's going to be that competitive max and floor that we talked about yesterday, Patrick. I think it was just this weird, perfect storm of scenario for the Mets. Again, Patrick, you and I spoke yesterday as far as we spent a lot of time with about Kevin Gausman and Marcus Stroman. But, you know, with the Mets missing out on Gausman and actually, as we know, gave more money or offered more money than the Blue Jays did. And he chose to go, you know, still stick with Toronto. I'm sure partly it really stuck in the craw Mets of the brass, probably especially Steve Cohen. I'm sure he doesn't like being, you know, turned down and said no, especially when you give a big offer. And then, you know, just the need point of, you know, pivoting and then missing out on Gausman to just going all in on Scherzer. I heard that even Alex Cohen, his wife, kind of in on this as well, talking to Max Scherzer's wife and their family and just talking about the vision of the Mets and where they're looking to go. And I know it comes down to the almighty dollar. I got the biggest offer. I think it was just a perfect storm for the Mets. And I really think if you really 3 years, he's 37, going to be 38 with the 2 year opt out. I think this is about as perfect a deal as like you could have asked for to get someone like Max Scherzer.
Yeah. And we talked about this, Sal, a couple weeks ago about how the Mets needed to do this. They needed the court players. And obviously, we were specifically talking about in house players, but with a guy like Max Scherzer, yeah, you have to court him. You have to go through this process of showing him that you want him. And obviously, in the end, like both of you have said, it's in the end, the money is going to be what talks, but these guys want to feel wanted and they want to see a vision. I mean, Max Scherzer, if he is choosing between the Mets for $43 million, the Orioles for $43 million, he's choosing the team that has the richest owner in baseball, has obviously some vision of competing soon and in the long term too. So I think it's important that the Mets are making sure that they do these small, little, minute type of things to ensure that the players want to come here too.
And I agree. And to that point, I'm going to touch on it a little later, but I do want to just talk about more so what this means, that this signing kind of echoes to the sport as far as we're here now. You know, that Steve Cohen, big market, we're not going to stand to the side and be told no and be passive. We're here. And it started with that with Lindor last year with the extension. But, you know, this is obviously a different scenario. They didn't trade for Max Scherzer. They straight up, you know, wooed him to come here. And even more so, too, I thought about this. This is probably the start now of a very long relationship between the Mets and future Scott Boras clients. We know Boras didn't want to come, you know, bring his players here. We know his past rants and how he used to trash on the Mets and all that. And a lot of it was warranted as far as them, you know, being, you know, on the cheap side and not wanting to go all in. That's out the window now. And I think more than anything, this deal, probably one that was always going to break that or break the ice with the two groups, you know, Boras and the Mets. Scherzer was the one to do it. I'm really glad it was him. And I'm really excited in that aspect too. Patrick, I want to get your thoughts.
I absolutely think that this is kind of like a, oh, we're here kind of moment. I wonder, with all this spending that's happening for the Mets specifically ahead of this negotiation between owners and players, where I guarantee you 23 out of the 30 owners want to be like, hey, let's really like tamper down the spending. And then you get people like the Rangers or the Mets and Steve Cohen coming in and they're throwing out, you know, 250 to, in the Rangers case, over $500 million in contracts right before these negotiations kick off. So I wonder if kind of like if there might even be some infighting within the owners, just to kind of really about what baseball looks like for them and the economics really look like for them. Because really it's been set up recently to where teams are really rewarded for performing poorly, getting your draft picks, and really not spending any sort of money. I mean, that's where you do kind of get this wide range of people where the Dodgers at some points are spending over $250 million and the Rays are spending under, you know, $50 million. Or the Orioles, I guess, are probably a better example of that, of spending like dirt cheap money and getting all these wildly different results. And people think you can just build the team that one way. So I really wonder what this kind of spending frenzy ahead of these negotiations are really going to, you know, if this will kind of affect what the negotiations look like.
Yeah. And just talking about opening payrolls and stuff like that, Max Scherzer will be making $43.3 million in 2022. And right now, the Indians' opening day payroll is $43.2 million. So, yeah, I mean, so to that point, I'm in favor of a salary floor. I know that's something they've talked about, and I'm sure that's something they will continue to talk about. And I'm absolutely in favor of it. I think that's one of the only ways you can kind of curb tanking. it's obviously not going to completely solve tanking. There's still going to be teams that are right at the floor, but I think it kind of forces teams to make sure that they're actually spending. And even more so, I think it'll have teams try to lock up some of the younger players too, which I think is good for the sport, so that you get homegrown players staying in a house a long time. So I think it'll be interesting to see, Patrick said, how this kind of plays into it, because how many owners can go into these meetings crying poor when teams are throwing out? I mean, it's not just the Mets. The Rangers have thrown out $500 million. I mean, the Seattle Mariners, of all people, signed Robbie Ray for $115 million. It's not just the Mets that are spending money. Teams are throwing around money, and I'm sure we'll see more teams. I mean, the Blue Jays, of all people, $110 million to Kevin Gausman. So it's just crazy.
Yeah, and also Jose Barrios, too. They gave him the extension at the beginning of all this. So they spent a ton of money as well.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's just like with all this kind of spending money and all this stuff and like all these teams, you know, crying poor, it's like, I don't know, just giving people a salary floor would kind of setting it up like the NBA does, where it's like they have a salary floor as well as a kind of a higher luxury tax bill, where like, all right, if you're not at that salary floor with a month left in the season, they just give bonuses to players. If you do kind of get into this world of like, okay, well, I'm not going to pay a lot of players, or I'm not going to pay a lot of good players, it kind of might even add in the benefit of the players will still make more money if you add in this salary floor. But the other thing is too, is that like, we'll probably talk about this once the lockouts start, but like that ridiculous playoff scenario where they kind of want all this more playoff revenue coming in too, is that these owners will still be crying poor when they get even more revenue from the playoffs. That's a topic for a future podcast.
Definitely. You know, that's looming, but I do want to bring it more to the macro and to the Mets. And again, back to Max Scherzer. And Mike, I'll start with you. Realistically, what are your expectations for Max Scherzer? What should Met fans have for their expectations? Curious to get your thoughts on that.
I mean, I know a lot of non-Mets fans have pointed out, well, geez, you're giving $43 million to a guy who's 37 years old. He had a career best ERA last year, 2.46. He still pitched a ton of innings. He pitched really well. He looked really well. I think the only thing you worry about at all is the fact that he kind of had some dead arm in the playoffs. I don't think that's that big a deal. That happens to a lot of players, 37 or not, and a lot of players even more coming off a season where they had a short season. So I'm not too worried about that. There's not a whole lot of risk in a short deal like this at 3 years. I think you're going to see Max Scherzer be a 3 ERA guy for probably all 3 years. So even if he's there, he's a number two, I guess, in the Mets rotation. It's just odd thinking about Max Scherzer being like, well, hey, he can have these numbers and he's still a number two. Like, yeah, I think we're fine with Max Scherzer. If he has a 3 ERA, I think the Mets will be just fine with that. He's not a guy that's had these injury riddled years where you're worried about kind of his workload and everything. So I don't see a lot of risk in this type of deal.
It's just like, it's so wild to me that we're playing through these scenarios of Max Scherzer pitching for the Mets, like that I can even expect this. But before, let's say before the 2021 season, if I could tell you, you can give any pitcher in the game a contract until they're 40, your top two choices might be Max Scherzer and Jacob DeGrom. Because they've proven, you know, I know Jacob DeGrom had a little bit of an issue with his elbow this year, but like they've proven for a while that they can pitch into this kind of like older age and stay pretty healthy throughout the year. Or they can, like in Max Scherzer's case, they can kind of like, you know, knock off an injury and then, you know, come back and maybe only have to miss a start or something like that. I mean, my expectations have to be pretty sky high, but I think like their expectations that like Max Scherzer sets for himself. So it's not like he's coming into a scenario where he is going to have to really feel like he has to overperform. Like no one's going to judge himself harder than himself. But I also wouldn't be surprised if kind of there might be times where he might hit the IL once or twice, but it more of like a maintenance thing rather than a serious injury thing. And that's something that I think that's going to really matter about the team's depth and kind of what they do additionally in the starting pitching market. But we'll have to see. I mean, if Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer even perform 90% of their expectations, they'll probably have two of the top 10 pitchers in baseball next year.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we're going to get to those two in just a second, but you know, my expectations kind of to what you're saying, you know, I'm expecting Scherzer to make about 25 starts. You know, I'm not expecting him to make 30 plus. I understand that. But I am expecting for that money and for also the win now that he's going to pretty much be taking the ball every fifth day. And someone like him, who's a bulldog, you know, fights through those kind of naggy things at points. And like you said, you know, he's proven that he can be healthy. Ron Darling on Baseball Night in New York on SNY just before I was watching it, he mentioned when Scherzer during the year, he got his tricep looked at when he was having kind of the tightness during the summer. The doctor said when they looked at his elbow structurally, they couldn't believe that this was someone that had, you know, over 3,000 strikeouts, you know, 400 games started, you know, the whole bit. So, you know, he's someone that's aged well. The expectations have to be high, especially with someone like Jacob DeGrom there to push him. I heard they're pretty good friends outside of this to begin with. And, you know, I want to pivot, speaking of those two, and just kind of get both your thoughts on, could this Scherzer, DeGrom, 1-2 punch, two-headed monster, is this the best in Mets history? I know they've had some great ones, you know, particularly Seaver and Kuzman, but do you think these guys could even top them?
Yeah, obviously you have to, they both have to stay healthy, but if these two guys stay healthy, it's the best duo the Mets have had. Obviously, a lot of people like thinking of that way will kind of depend on obviously performance, which like we're talking about, we're not terribly worried about, but also depend on what the team does, because that's always thought of as, well, they did this. So, so I think the team aspect will play into it. And having them at the start of it, I mean, that basically puts you in, you're a contender, regardless of if the Mets didn't do a single thing the rest of this offseason. They're a contender right now. I know the Braves just won the World Series, but the Braves really haven't done much of anything yet. The East isn't that great. The Phillies haven't done anything yet either. The second most active team in the division has been the Marlins. I still don't like their roster. I think Avisel Garcia is a nice add for them, but I still, it's just a team that doesn't score enough runs. So yeah, I think this is the best duo, has a chance to be the Mets' best duo in franchise history.
Yeah, especially because you were, sorry, Sal, but especially because like you weren't getting peak Pedro Martinez. You were getting a good Pedro Martinez.
Yeah.
But you weren't getting a peak Pedro Martinez along with like a peak Johan Santana, you know, and I'm sure there's, you know, way back in the day of Seaver and Kuzman, like, yeah, they like one's a Hall of Famer. One's like a Mets Hall of Famer, but he's not like a surefire Hall of Famer. Max Scherzer is a surefire Hall of Famer. And again, we talk about health. As long as Jacob DeGrom kind of continues on this path for 4 or 5 years, he's a surefire Hall of Famer. The last 5 years, when you look at kind of ERA standings or something like that, if DeGrom's in the lead, who's right behind him? It's Max Scherzer. So, I mean, this is just how it's been for the last 5 years. So the fact that they're on the, you know, if you ask anybody else in baseball, they'll probably tell you that is the best duo that probably we've ever seen, or has the potential to be at least, you know, like any two people would, you could put these two people on any franchise's best 1-2 in baseball. And that's probably the best or one of the best in the history of their franchise.
Absolutely. And I was going to say the same thing, Patrick. You know, for me, obviously, you know, perfect world, they're healthy and all that. And that's what we're hoping for and expecting and everything that we get what they're used to, that this is going to be the best, for at least for me, it'll be the best 1-2 punch I'll probably ever see in my life. Even with at Scherzer's age, you know, I still think that even, you know, last year he showed he's still one of the top pitchers in the game. That's why he got this deal. But just even more so, you think about all time greats. These are what two of these guys are for their generation. To have them on the same team, and you know, the old phrase, iron sharpens iron, greatness pushes greatness. You know, I think you've seen that before. You've heard that before. It's going to be really, really cool to see these guys together on an everyday basis, how they push each other. Like you kind of touched on it, Patrick, you know, when one's starting, how they can kind of outdo the other, and just the mentality that they're going to bring. DeGrom made me a little nervous last year. I will admit, you know, for the time that he missed and just kind of how that was handled. And he kind of seemed to be the one pulling himself back and nervous. So that worried me a little bit because I never thought of DeGrom like that up until last year. Scherzer's a bulldog. I know he had the arm. He pulled himself in the playoffs this year. I take that with a grain of salt. It was still a new team, new environment, you know, just with the short season last year, Patrick, like you mentioned, I don't put too much stock into that because I saw what he did the whole year and over his career. So I'm just really, really excited like for that aspect alone. I'm obviously expecting success on the field. And like you said, that's what we're ultimately going to judge. But just the fact that these two guys are going to be, you know, riding the planes together and sitting in the clubhouse together in the dugout is going to be awesome.
And to kind of just put a bow on the conversation of those two at the top of the rotation, just think about the playoffs. You get into a playoff situation with the Mets, and you immediately know that the first two games you're facing DeGrom and Scherzer. I mean, and then these are both guys that have come back on short rest before. So you could face, in seven games, you could face these guys four times. I mean, that's if you're lucky enough to get in seven games in that scenario. But I mean, that's just crazy to think about. Obviously, that's something as a Mets fan you want to think about, is the fact that going in the playoffs, you have those two right there.
And real quick, we saw that in 2015. What dominant pitching can do in a short series. Obviously it didn't work all the way through. I'm not getting into that, but that's just a, you know, example there. Patrick, you had something else for one sec?
I mean, you think about the Dodgers in 2015. I mean, like, you know, the Mets kind of came in there and, you know, and just hit a bunch of homers off, you know, the Mets themselves had dominant pitching, but you know, that lineup of Kershaw and Greinke. I mean, at the time, those two are probably two of the best five pitchers in baseball. So that just speaks to the importance of, you know, number one, the Mets doubling down on getting more pitching. They shouldn't be done getting bats.
No, definitely. And I could talk about this Scherzer signing all day. I really do. I feel on cloud nine, I am the happiest person in America. I will, you know, question anybody that says different right now. But I do want to pivot from Scherzer to now, you know, where do we see the Mets now looking in free agency? Is it still pushing to get Javi Baez? Is it trying to round out the back end of the rotation and the bullpen? Where do we see them looking? Patrick, I'm going to start with you.
Well, I mean, we got Mr. Breaking News over here. You know, he mentioned, you know, they're interested in, you know, Yusei Kikuchi, Carlos Rodon. I think they're still kind of looking at that. Maybe not the upper echelon of the starting pitcher market. Marcus Stroman's really the only person kind of left there. But maybe if they can get someone for like a $15 million a year sort of deal, they'll go after that. But at this point, it seems like the big guy that they really want to lock down still is Javi Baez. You know, if Javi Baez just wants money, he might not end up on the Mets. But if he kind of wants a really good time, he wants to play with his friend and, you know, play defense behind Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer, I think he'll, you know, this isn't like a Max Scherzer situation where like he might have an obligation to take the most money. You know, Javi Baez might be, you know, a little bit more selective just for kind of what he wants. But yeah, and then, you know, it's just reliever depth on top of that too. It's just like you're just stacking bodies because you never know what's going to happen in the season.
Yeah, and I mean, as you mentioned, I did tweet out earlier that they've had talks with Rodon and Kikuchi, and both of those guys just happened to be Boris Klein. In previous seasons, that would be like a brick wall for Mets and Mets fans. And now it's like, well, they just got this deal done with Scherzer. Like, why not more? They're two of the best starters left on the market too. Rodon is probably the best. I think he has the highest WAR last year of any pitcher available. You're kind of hesitant there. And why we haven't seen a big market for him is he had some arm issues last year and his velocity went down. And then we saw his velocity spike a little bit late in the season, but he wasn't able to carry it through a start. So, I mean, that's an obvious issue that any team, it's a guy, I don't think he's going to sign today. He'll probably sign after the lockout, maybe even throw for some teams to try to get more interest that way, just to show teams, yeah, this is a guy that is going to throw 97, 98. Yeah, and Kikuchi, the Mets have like zero left-handed pitchers on the 40-man roster right now. They have Sapuki, who is coming off surgery. They have Lucchese, who's coming off surgery and likely going to get non-tendered. And they have David Peterson coming off surgery. Those are the three lefties on the 40-man roster. I mean, you don't need a lefty per se in the rotation, but I think the Mets would like to have one. And I think Kikuchi is a solid back-end starter. I know Alex Cobb is another guy that I really wanted. It sounds like he's finalizing a deal with the Giants right now. And if they do end up with, I mean, missing out on some of these starters, I think Rich Hill's always out there. He pitched fairly well for the Mets, really. To have him as another depth piece certainly wouldn't be a bad idea, or someone of that ilk. As for Javi Baez, when free agency kind of kicked off, it was, well, he's going to go back to the Mets. They're just going to pay him whatever, and this is going to happen. As things got progressed more into the offseason, it was like, well, the Mets still kind of want Baez, but let's temper expectations. I know there's kind of there's some differences of opinion on Baez. We've talked about this a little bit before between the analytics department and some of the other group of the Mets front office of what are we going to get from Baez in this contract? A team like the Tigers jumped in there. So now you have a team like the Tigers that are interested in Baez. And like we've talked about, they're showing that they want to win. They traded for Tucker Barnhart. They signed it, Erod. They're looking at winning and they might be willing to throw Baez a little bit more money than the Mets. I know as of this afternoon, people had mentioned the Mets still interested in Baez, which I think they are. But I think after all the spending that they've done, I think they're more interested in Baez and kind of like a home, not like a hometown discount, but a little bit more on what they would like to give Baez than maybe he could get like the tip top deal with a different team, say that like the Tigers. If I was betting on it, I would say that the Mets don't get Baez and they get another position player that's cheaper, shorter term. Like we've mentioned Kyle Seager before, someone of that ilk.
I agreed. I was going to say the same kind of deal. And even in general, maybe not a Baez. Maybe they could still be in on like a Bryant if he doesn't sign by Thursday. You know, when once the CBA gets signed, there's that mad rush of players, you know, before spring training. That could benefit the Mets too, as I, you know, that seems like that may be their plan. Because I do think they are going to get another infielder. I think they need one. I think they may do something there.
Yeah, I think from talking to a couple people within the Mets, they signed Escobar A because they like his bat and B, they like his versatility. And they thought they were getting him on a pretty fair deal at 2 years, $20 million. But they do prefer him at second base, which is why I mentioned someone like Kyle Seager, a trade for like Mike Moustakas or something like that. I do think the Mets would prefer to slide Escobar over to second, have someone else play third. And then, like I mentioned the other day, they're fielding calls on Jeff McNeil because right now he would likely be the starting second baseman. So they're fielding calls there. So I think if the Mets had their way, they would kind of sign a third baseman, Escobar's at second, and they trade McNeil for pitching. I think that's a very likely scenario of all of that happening. Of course, like these things can change so much. Maybe someone calls them up and gives them a really good pitcher that they didn't expect for someone like JD Davis. He ends up going and they decide to want to keep McNeil because they want to keep that depth. So, I mean, these things fluctuate, but I think that's something you're looking at is a third baseman.
Yeah, no. And Patrick and I talked yesterday as far as the three odd men out, as far as with JD, Dom, and McNeil. You know, I personally think that they're going to keep McNeil, I would think, just because he's a guy that you think would bounce back and you don't want to sell pennies on the dollar with him. And I think versatility wise and at least lengthen out the bench. And I mentioned, you know, I think he's a perfect candidate to platoon in right field with Canna. If they can get a third baseman, they put Escobar at second, you could put McNeil in right field and then Canna and McNeil can kind of platoon as far as with the lefty righty. But you know, it's interesting. I again said that yesterday too. It's interesting how a couple of years makes. McNeil was like a cornerstone guy, even Dom and JD at points after 2019. And now it's, you know, they're 1 foot out, it seems like, you know, out the door.
Well, I think kind of the reason why at least it's out there that they're taking calls on McNeil is that even after a down year, he still has way more value than Dom Smith or JD Davis for the reasons you talked about. It was just one down year. He's still been a very productive major league hitter and he's versatile. And he's not versatile in the way that, oh, you can just stick him out there like JD Davis and Dom Smith. No, you can stick him in both corner outfield spots and he's pretty good there. And you can stick him at second and third and he's pretty passable at both spots. So I think that's why the Mets would ultimately trade him is not necessarily because his value's down, but because he actually has more value than either of those guys. And I've talked to a couple of teams that actually think that McNeil's value isn't down, that they don't see it down after last year. It was just one bad year after a good major league start to his career.
I wouldn't be surprised if some teams kind of saw the situation that McNeil was in and the kind of information that came out about, like, you know, McNeil kind of was butting heads with the front office a little bit, clearly butting heads with teammates a little bit, but some teams might be like, let's just get him out of there. And they don't view him as like Mike said, as kind of like this distressed asset. 72 hours ago, like, we didn't think Max Scherzer would ever be on the Mets. And a week ago, we didn't ever think that like Starling Marte would start in center field for the Mets. Like that was like, I think a lot of people wanted that, but to actually, for that to be like a tangible thing that we get to like see and watch, really just speaks to, like Mike said, just how quickly all this kind of stuff changes. So where, yeah, it's like, all right, likely it might be that Jeff McNeil gets traded, especially if they don't land one of these kind of mid-tier pitchers or something. Like he might be on the team next year. He might be the starting third baseman next year. And the Mets might pull another kind of deal out of their butts, especially, you know, like Sal mentioned, right after however long this CBA lasts, like if the owners really want to drag this into the spring training time, there might be some people who just kind of go off and be like, I'm going to sign for a year. You know, once they kind of really understand what the terms of the new CBA are, and then just go off and, you know, that could be something that the Mets kind of take advantage of. So we'll see how it goes over the next 24 hours, maybe the next 16 by the time people listen to this. But it's going to be a whole new ball game kind of whenever the lockout ends.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, I wanted to pivot from that to just kind of ask you guys a question that I had as far as what you think is more important for the long-term success for the Mets, and particularly now the Steve Cohen era with the Mets. Do you think it's the current offseason spending spree itself, or the message that it sends to the rest of the sport about the Mets' seriousness to contend and contend right away?
Well, long-term, I think just the general establishing this relationship with someone like Scott Boras. It wasn't very professional of Steve Cohen to come out on Twitter and kind of say like, hey, like I didn't like how this agent, like I'm very mad at this agent. But I think the general understanding of kind of like people conducting business with each other, like I think that's important long-term, because Steve Cohen is going to be the owner of the Mets after Max Scherzer's gone, probably after Jacob DeGrom's gone, after most of these players are gone. So the fact that he's establishing these good connections, and it's like Steve Cohen was upset that they couldn't come back with another offer to Steven Matz. Whereas you look a couple years ago with Zach Wheeler, like they were like, no, we didn't even want to make a counter offer. Speaking of Brody and the Wilpons, they didn't want to make a counter offer and they had no desire to, and they were perfectly fine with letting someone like that walk. Whereas now it kind of seems like there's an ownership that really wants to kind of keep the players that are valuable within the organization. Shorter term, it's obviously the spending. The spending is the way to go for the Mets over the next 2 years. I honestly, like if they didn't have this Cano contract, and they didn't have, you know, let's say Michael Conforto accepted a qualifying offer, Noah Syndergaard accepted a qualifying offer. Like, I don't know if the offseason kind of plays like this, but once they declined it, once they realized they still had this big Robinson Cano contract on the books, that really they were already starting off like close to the competitive balance tax. Cohen has been very open about just like, let's blow passes. So it really seems like they're playing it. Sal, we talked about this exact thing yesterday in the podcast. I'm like, it really seems like they're playing for the next 2 years is just to like not have a cap on how much they're spending. And in the third year, you know, once the penalties lessen or something like that, or get more harsh in the third year for going over the CBT, that, you know, then they'll kind of worry about how to get under the tax or something like that. But again, the competitive balance tax might look a lot different in the, you know, in this post lockout world. So again, it might just be a scenario where it's like, I don't know what it's going to look like. So I'm just going to spend money now because I don't want to regret either A, not spending money before, or just like, you know, if it was going to be a severe penalty at the end of it all, then I might as well just spend it now.
Yeah, no, you know, I touched on it before. I just think for me, obviously for the short term, like we said, for the Mets, it helps because they need to be competitive right now. But then just like I said, in general, showing, hey, we're going to, you know, run and operate like a big market. We feel that we're in it every year and we're going to operate as such. And I just think that's super refreshing for us as Mets fans. It's a small victory, obviously. The ultimate thing is success on the field and winning there. But, you know, these are the small steps to do it, and we're getting there. And I think that's something we should be happy about.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that the Mets are in this position. Steve Cohen and Billy Epler didn't create this position that their team was filled with holes. That's just kind of how it is. And this offseason, they knew they were going to have to spend. I don't think that's what Cohen wants to do every year long term. I mean, they've built up the analytics department. We're going to be, after they make their new hires, we're looking at 30 plus people. So they're not only spending on the field, they're spending in the front office to make sure that they can try to take that Dodgers type of avenue too, where they can try to find the Chris Taylors, the Max Muncies. They can get the value for cheap too. And that's ultimately how you build a contender long-term. I mean, it's really tough to just consistently spend, be good. I think spending and being smart, like hopefully the Mets are trying to do, is how you build that long-term.
Absolutely. And that's the point really to make. And I'm glad you did. And you know, it's partly what I was trying to make as far as in the short term, you know, they are willing to spend, showing, you know, that they'll fill the holes when necessary. In this instance, it's unique because it's a lot that they have to do because the farm system is right now, you know, not as plentiful. But right, you know, a lot of that long-term success that they're doing, like you said, is the analytical part. And then hopefully they could be a team like the Dodgers, that a lot of their, you know, talent is homegrown, but can spend when they need to fill holes, you know, here and there. And they do so, and they, you know, do whatever they have to do to be competitive. So, you know, I think we're on that way, and I'm excited for it. But, you know, kind of the last thing I just wanted to, you know, talk about was how much more enticing the Mets managerial job has gotten over the last few days, and kind of what you guys think as far as maybe some names that maybe wouldn't have been in it, maybe that, you know, could be jumping in now, and how the lockout can maybe help the Mets, you know, managerial search.
Yeah, the Mets don't really seem like they're in search right now, which, I mean, makes sense. They have a small window where they got to get the players. That's not so for the manager. They can talk to managers during the lockout. I mean, they can do that. So why focus on that now? As long as you get the players. I mean, it would have looked pretty bad if the Mets went into the lockout not having hired a manager and also didn't sign four of the top free agents. So, yeah, I mean, getting Escobar, Marte, Canna, and Scherzer, I mean, yeah, that's got to be a draw for managers to want to come to the Mets. And that's what we're talking about, too, with the long term, is not just drawing players to the franchises. You want to draw all the brightest minds, whether it's in the front office or it's coaching staff, too. You want to get those people in your organization any way you can. And, I mean, obviously the Mets have Jeremy Hefner, but if you're a free agent pitching coach and you see Max Scherzer and Jacob deGrom on a team you're interviewing for, you're like, holy shit, yeah, why wouldn't I want to work with two Hall of Famers? Or if you're a manager seeing like the kind of depth that the Mets have positionally, that makes your job easier too, because you have all of these different options to rotate in and out. I think it's obviously becoming more and more attractive for a manager and the coaches that they're going to need to hire. And I think it'll only get more so that way once we see a couple more signings, maybe tonight.
Yeah. And at this point too, it's like with the amount of talent that the Mets have amassed, it's honestly a lot of kind of, it's going to be making sure that a dust up between Francisco Lindor and Jeff McNeil doesn't happen. It's going to be making sure Max Scherzer doesn't get upset with James McCann over something. It's obviously, managing is always kind of managing the relationships. But even more so now, especially because like a manager's not really stressing about what his lineup looks every day now, you know? So it's kind of like, as long as they can get somebody who can really understand the personalities of the players and kind of just make sure people are good on that end, and then be somebody that they actually listen to. I don't know if like Jeff McNeil just wasn't, Luis Rojas wasn't getting through to Jeff McNeil on certain things, or maybe there's, you know, some veteran players or something like that that might be able to get through to someone like Jeff McNeil as well. But really just making sure everybody's on the same page, because it's going to be a lot of new players. Granted, a lot of them are veteran players and kind of understand the whole idea of a clubhouse and all that kind of stuff. This Mets team is not going to be the Mets team of the, you know, of 2017, 2018, 2019, where they're really young. This has very quickly become a very old Mets team. Not in a bad way, just in terms of like, they just went out and got the guys that they wanted. So really you just kind of need somebody in there who will just be able to make sure everything kind of just gels really well. I mean, you look at someone like Dusty Baker, who kind of just like hopped into that Astros situation, kind of calmed everybody down from, you know, the cheating scandal that they went through, and really just got everybody on the same page and focused on playing baseball. I don't know who it's going to be. It might be someone, you know, like a Ron Washington or a Buck Showalter or something. It might be a young Buck, but they'll have plenty of time to figure that out.
Yeah, I think Patrick made a good point about the Mets did. That was what a couple people have noted with Escobar and Marte and Kenna, we're all talking about older veteran players that are all well respected in the clubhouse. And obviously Scherzer fits that mold too. So you're already building a very strong clubhouse that makes it even easier for the manager, hopefully. So they can kind of just walk in and know that they have these veterans that aren't going to take any of the crap or make sure the guys are doing what they need to be doing. I know Zach Scott was talking about like players not hydrating the way they're supposed to and stuff like that. So I mean, kind of a funny issue, but yeah, just like small things like this that have kind of popped up. I think getting those type of veteran players kind of alleviates that anyway. And then maybe depending on who the manager is, that even strengthens that type of thing. I really don't see the Mets going for another first time manager right now. I would be kind of surprised at that. I think they'd at least go with someone that has some veteran leadership that's won before. I think that's what Cohen ultimately wants. And I don't think Epler is going to really fight him on that. So it'll be interesting to see. I think we're going to get plenty of manager talk during the lockout because we really can't talk about players all that often. So I think we'll get plenty of manager talk and we'll start getting some candidates pretty soon.
It's going to be great for MetsMorizedOnline.com.
Absolutely. And so is the last few days, I would say as well. So, capping it off there, it was just a spectacular last few days. I'm on like cloud nine. I don't even know what else to say. It's a real bummer that the lockout's coming on Thursday, but it's a bummer, but that's what made all this craziness, which is also pretty cool. So maybe, you know, Uncle Rob Manfred, instead of trying to put half the teams in the playoffs, he could think of something like this to make free agency really cool all the time. I don't know. That's above my pay grade, but someone smarter than me can figure that out. But until then, maybe we'll have another big free agent sign. We'll have to hop back on tomorrow. We'll see. But, until then, we'll bring you all the latest of what's going on. And don't forget to get Metsmerized.